This morning on WCHL, the final two names in the five indictments of athlete-agent inducement at UNC have been announced, and now another North Carolina university is in the mix. UNC Chancellor Carol Folt says Pat McCrory is wrong in his assessment of the lack of job readiness that Carolina gives its students.
I believe deeply that places like Carolina, amongst the best in the nation, does that extremely well.
And some of Chapel Hill Carbondale's business leaders are forever enshrined in the Business Hall of Fame.
He loved Chapel Hill. He loved this university. He's still with us.
These stories and much more, plus your Chapel Hill Carbondale traffic and weather together. And in WCHL Championship Sports, we'll get the perspective from a Pitt Panther on this week's matchup between Carolina and Pittsburgh. And
how many stadiums can they build in the city of Atlanta anyway?
That's this morning in our Chansky Sports Notebook.
This is 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carbondale's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. WCHL's morning news with Ron Stutz begins now.
8:05 at WCHL, we have 29 degrees in Chapel Hill. Sunshine today, not as cool. High today in the middle 50s. North Carolina Central University now joins UNC in the North Carolina Secretary of State's investigation of sports agents and college players. Former North Carolina Central University quarterback Michael Wayne Johnson Jr. has been charged on the basis of arranging a meeting in May of 2010 between Georgia sports agent Terry Watson and former UNC football player Greg Little. Around $5,000 was exchanged in the meeting, according to a previous indictment. In addition, Johnson has been accused of providing a mailing address to accept packages of cash for Greg Little. Johnson appeared in court yesterday. Friday, Willie Barley, the man who connected former UNC defender Marvin Austin with Watson, was charged with athlete-agent inducement. Barley was released on a $30,000 bond. Spurred on by the NCAA investigations, the Secretary of State's office began its own investigation. So far, criminal charges against five people have been filed. Jennifer Lauren Wiley Thompson, academic tutor for UNC athletes. Terry Watson, the agent, faces 13 felony counts of athlete-agent inducement. Patrick Jones, the Georgia real estate agent, has been charged with providing money. And Barley and Johnson now added to that list. George Jeter, a spokesman for the Secretary of State's office, says the investigation is focused only on sports agents, not schools or athletes. You can read the story on our website, chapelbrewers.com. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory says the state's public universities are not training their students to be able to find a job out of college.
I believe deeply that places like Carolina, amongst the best in the nation, does that extremely well.
That is UNC Chancellor Carol Folt, who disagrees with the governor. She spoke with WCHL's Jim Hevner in a new special for her first conversation to you after taking office back in July. The governor says he wants to see liberal arts degrees removed from the curriculum because it won't prepare the students for the world outside the walls of the university. A News and Observer article quotes Governor Pat McCrory as saying there's nothing wrong with the liberal arts, but that if somebody wanted to study them, they ought to go to a private college. However, Chancellor Folt's message in her early days at UNC is to not only give the students a wide range of knowledge, but a deep understanding of that knowledge.
Each one of them has a major, sometimes two majors, that have detailed skills taking them all the way to the forefront of knowledge in that area. And these skills are deeply transferable.
And the chancellor says she doesn't want to focus on just today.
The skills we want for the future are the skills for students that can prepare themselves not for the jobs that are sitting there today, but for the jobs and creating the jobs of tomorrow. If you think about digital world, the jobs that our students are getting now didn't even exist 10 or 15 years ago.
She says no matter what the governor says, Carolina is not struggling with getting students into jobs immediately following college.
85% of the students that graduate from Carolina within the first year have full-time jobs or in graduate school. It's up there at the levels of the highest of our elites. We'll continue to press forward on that. And I feel proud of what they're doing post-graduation, and I think they're going to be the people that are helping to bring new economies into the state.
Stay tuned to the WCHL Morning News at 8:45. We'll bring in the final part of Jim Hebner's interview with Chancellor Folt. You can also hear the interview in its entirety Saturday night at 8 and Sunday at 12 noon. We'll replay it. You can also hear the conversation by going to our website at chapelbrew.com. They are the establishments which have shaped our local business economy, each in its own unique way. Southern Season, Mama Dips, Fitch Lumber, they name just a few. The leaders and entrepreneurs behind these staples of our community were honored last night as the inaugural class of the Chapel Hill Carborough Business Hall of Fame. WCHL's Rachel Nash has more.
The Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce recognized 12 individuals with a record of excellence in business management as well as having a positive impact on the community during their careers. The class included Mildred Council of Mama Dip's Kitchen, Orville Campbell of the Chapel Hill Weekly, and Frank Keenan of Keenan Oil and Keenan Transport. Keenan's son, Tom, spoke on behalf of his late father, who led what was at one time the largest petroleum transportation company in the Southeast. A proud UNC alumnus, Keenan supported his alma mater with generous donations throughout his lifetime.
Father's favorite words were, "The best speech is the shortest speech." So I am not going to disappoint him tonight. He loved Chapel Hill. He loved this university. He's still with us. I think he tells us what to do at least once a week.
A Southern Season started out as a one-man operation for tastemaker Michael Barefoot. Now it is one of the largest specialty food retailers in the United States. Barefoot, who opened a Southern Season in 1975, attributed his success to the community's loyalty. North Carolina House Representative Valerie Fushi was a presenter during the ceremony at the Carolina Inn. She proudly welcomed Council, also known as Mama Dip, a trailblazer in Southern cuisine, to the stage. Council was greeted with the evening's first standing ovation.
For her part in putting Chapel Hill on the culinary map, her generous support of local organizations, and her leadership in minority business community, we proudly induct Mildred Mama Dip Council into the Chapel Hill Carborough.
In 1976, Council opened Dip's Country Kitchen with just 3 employees and $64 to buy ingredients. Decades later, her restaurant is still thriving, and Council said she hopes to expand.
And that's all I ever done was cook, you know. Been in the restaurant, and it has really been successful. It has been really big successful, yeah. And I know so many of these people.
WCHL's own Jim Hevner was given a special introduction from Top of the Hill proprietor Scott Maitland.
Jim Hevner is Chapel Hill Carborough's first media mogul, parlaying a small-town radio station into the flagship of a national sports broadcasting network, a cable TV company, an advertising circular, a university phone book publisher, and so much more.
Hevner thanked his mentor, Sandy McClamrock, Chapel Hill's longest-serving mayor and former owner of WCHL.
As mayor of this town for 8 years during the civil rights crisis, he set the standard for community service that we were expected to follow. While he gave me the room to screw up and learn how to do it, he changed my life. Sandy, thank you.
Chamber President Aaron Nelson commented on the all-star class of business innovators.
We are in a room with legends. It's incredible to hear the stories of the places that I take my children to now and the folks that started that and have forever shaped our community.
Nelson added that the Chamber will induct 3 to 4 new members to the Chapel Hill Carborough Hall of Fame annually. Rachel Nash, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Congratulations to the inaugural members of the Chapel Hill Carborough Business Hall of Fame. Changes in store for University Mall with a new movie theater coming in 2015. As you've heard here on WCHL, some of our town leaders hope more change will happen just down Fordham Boulevard. Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinsmith has made it clear that he wants to move forward with plans to transform the area around the Ephesus-Fordham Boulevard intersection. With Tuesday's news that the Dillard's and University Mall would close its doors and eventually a 13-screen luxury movie theater would open in its place, Mayor Kleinsmith says now is the time to embrace change, which he believes is necessary in both areas along Fordham Boulevard.
I think for one thing, this announcement today helps remind folks that we're serious about working to enhance our commercial tax base, about providing high-quality retail if we can help people understand that and trust us on that, then we can move forward with Ephesus Church in Fordham to provide that next step.
As part of a greater redevelopment plan for University Mall, four new boutiques, a sporting goods store, and a restaurant have already opened or will soon be moving in. The shopping center's Harris Teeter is undergoing a $9 million renovation. Kleinsmith said he hopes that the momentum which has pushed the transformation for University Mall helped to push plans forward for the Ephesus Fordham Focus Area, which is the space surrounding Rams Plaza near the intersection of Ephesus Church Road and Fordham Boulevard, and it extends all the way from South Elliott Road to the Chapel Hill Memorial Cemetery. The Chapel Hill mayor has said in the past that this area is underperforming and also difficult to navigate.
A lot of what we have going on works. A lot of what we don't have going on in that district isn't working. You know, lesser communities would just sit back and say, well, some of it's working, so we're done. This isn't that kind of community. We can do better.
Dwight Bassett, Chapel Hill's economic development officer, said that he and town staff are currently working to rezone that area. In order to do this, using form-based code has been suggested. Form-based code is a new planning tool that supporters like Kleinsmith have said will make the development process more predictable. Opponents worry that it will move the approval process out of the public eye. The plan to create a form-based code is still in its early stages now, with no action from the council plan until the spring. Bassett said that the redevelopment of the Ephesus Fordham focus area would complement the changes coming to University Mall and revitalize the look of the area, considered a gateway into Chapel Hill.
We think combined together it's a pretty exciting corridor. There are numerous developers less than a half mile away willing to invest in office, residential, retail, and hospitality uses, and that certainly adds to this center by providing additional market opportunities.
The Ephesus Fordham focus area is one part of the Chapel Hill 2020 comprehensive plan that seeks to set a vision for the town's growth. WCHL News Time, 8:16. Time now for traffic and weather together, and this traffic report is brought to you by Glass Half Full, the friendly, optimistic restaurant, wine bar, and wine shop right in the heart of downtown Carrboro. Good food, fine wine, and lots of fun, too. Go online to find out more at glasshalffullcarrboro.com. Now with your morning traffic on WCHL, here is Rand Northam.
Thank you very much, Ron. We are seeing some heavier delays this morning now. 15501 northbound between NC86 and NC54 seeing delays. NC54 eastbound and westbound seeing moderate to heavy delays between Barbie Chapel Road and I-40. And I-40 eastbound between NC751 and Apex Highway, NC55. That area seeing delays right now, just moderate, but could be seeing some heavier delays in some areas. Estes Drive heading westbound between Franklin Street and through MLK, seeing delays right now as well, just moderate there. If you see anything as you travel throughout the rest of the day, you can be a WCHL Road Warrior. Give us a call at 919-967-8363 or tweet us at WCHL. As always, we ask you to do that safely.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you.
WCHL's Chapel Hill Carrboro weather brought to you by the Carolina Inns, Carolina Crossroads Restaurant and Bar. Savor delectable cuisine prepared with fresh local ingredients created by Executive Chef James Clark and his talented culinary team. Carolina Crossroads Restaurant, the favorite place for gourmet cuisine. That's where they were last night for the big Business Hall of Fame installment ceremonies. And it is going to be nice and sunny today. Not as cool, with a high in the middle 50s, starting out at 29 degrees right now. Tonight, clear, cold, with a low around 30 again. And then tomorrow, partly sunny with a high around 60. You will notice pretty good weather over the next few days.
It's just as important as a good cup of coffee. Start your day with the only radio station that brings you local news about local people right here in our local community. This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. Now, once again, here's Ron Stutz.
It's 8:18 at WCHL. Governor Pat McCrory wants the public to adopt some abandoned and maltreated dogs while he and his wife keep seeking legislation to set minimum conditions at large commercial dog breeding operations. McCrory held a news conference on Wednesday to advertise a dog adoption day on Saturday at the Executive Mansion in Raleigh. Joining him outside the old Capitol building were a few dogs removed from a Pender County location last month. The governor said some of the Pender County dogs will be among pets on the mansion property looking for new owners this weekend. He and First Lady Ann McCrory promoted a bill this year that sets minimum care standards for some people who breed dogs to sell as pets. The measure passed the House but didn't get heard in the Senate. WCHL News Time, 8:19. Time for WCHL Championship Sports. Let's talk a little football. Pittsburgh, Carolina's next opponent on the football gridiron, is riding high off its upset win over Notre Dame last weekend. WCHL's Matt Oakes had a chance to chat with Pitt radio analyst and former quarterback Pat Bostick to preview the upcoming showdown between the Tar Heels and the Panthers on Saturday. Bostick says the Carolina no-huddle offense presents some huge challenges for the Panthers' defense.
Yeah, I really think North Carolina is a really good football team. I think they pose problems on offense and on defense. I think it's been remarkable how well they've played the past 3 weeks, obviously stringing three wins together after a rough start to the year and having lost their quarterback. Renner's obviously one of the better players, the better quarterbacks in the history of North Carolina football, and Williams has done an admirable job coming in for him. I think brings a different set of skills to the table. The Panthers are going to have to respect his ability to run a little bit more, but defensively, I think trying to combat this offense, you have to be able to, the moving parts have to be in place very quickly.
Once again, that is Pitt radio analyst and former quarterback Pat Bostick talking about this Saturday's matchup between Carolina and Pittsburgh. You can listen to the full conversation on our website, chapelbro.com. We are joined now by Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal and the Dave Glenn Radio Show. And Dave, first of all, thanks for joining us. And second of all, it would appear that with all the Carolina momentum that we have going now in Chapel Hill, it would appear that Carolina is facing a team this weekend with just as much momentum on their side.
Yeah, this is a pretty solid Pitt football team, and one thing that the Tar Heels have done well lately, Ron, and it's great to be with you as always, is they've exposed other offenses for being one-dimensional. You know, Virginia has a pretty good running back, but no confidence at quarterback. NC State had a pretty good running back, but no confidence at quarterback. Boston College had a very good running back, but little confidence at quarterback. And the Tar Heels' defense really exploited the one-dimensional nature of the Eagles and the Wolfpack and the Cavaliers. And what Pitt presents is a veteran quarterback in Tom Savage who does have confidence to go with a running game that is dangerous. So any defensive coordinator will tell you it's trickier to stop a balanced offense, and this Pitt team presents a balanced offense on most weekends.
On offense, Carolina's running game has improved. It's certainly not to the point where the Tar Heels want it to be, but with Marquise Williams going all the way at quarterback now, that is an instant improvement for the run game. But is Carolina two-dimensional as it gets ready for Pitt?
I think it is. And I think, you know, the reality of the situation, as much as, you know, the UNC community is rooting for Bryn Renner, now that his career is over, to get well quickly, and we'll always remember him as just a wonderful representative of the program on and off the field. You know, sort of the cold splash of water in the face reality is that Bryn Renner and Larry Fedora's offense were never really perfect puzzle pieces that fit together. They did their best. They made it work at times, and Bryn Renner is going to always hold some records along the way, but Marquise Williams, the mobile guy, the guy who can hurt you with his arm and his legs, that's the guy that Larry Fedora has and his offense have cultivated more frequently over the years at all of his coaching stops, head coach and assistant. So in that sense, Marquise Williams is the best fit for the Fed spread, and yes, his legs add a dimension to the UNC running game that really the Carolina offensive line this year simply hasn't been good enough to open big holes for the running backs the way it did last year. And obviously, Gio Bernard is in the NFL, so that complicates it a little bit further.
Dave, I thought it was just an outstanding tribute to Bryn Renner last week when Marquise came out and played the game in the number two jersey as a tribute to him. Do you know if he's planning to do that for the rest of the season, or was that a one-shot deal?
I am not certain, but he sounds like a guy that certainly wants to pay tribute to Bryn Renner the rest of the way. I don't know if that's automatically going to come in the form of the number two every weekend, but clearly every conversation Marquise Williams has includes something about how Bryn Renner, you know, these guys are competing for a job in one sense, but rooting for each other in another sense, has treated him like a little brother. And sometimes that's support and over-the-top love. Sometimes, Marquise said, it was Bryn Renner telling him that he didn't take football seriously enough. And, you know, you want to talk about the best of brotherhood or the best of family. That's the person that tells you the truth when it's a good thing, but it's the person that tells you the truth when it's a bad thing. You know, not everybody can do that. And Bryn Renner is given credit by Mark Leese himself for essentially getting the young guy to take football more seriously, pay more attention in the video room, be more serious in the off season. And Marquise wouldn't be the quarterback he is today if he had not taken that advice and lived it from Bryn Renner over the last couple of years.
Obviously a great relationship between those two, and the coaching staff has to absolutely love that. Dave Glenn, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thank you, Ron. Great to be with you.
Our coverage of Saturday's game will begin at 9 a.m. with Countdown to Kickoff presented by UNC Healthcare right here on WCHL. As the North Carolina field hockey team continues preparations for NCAA tournament play, it now can focus on a specific opponent. The third-ranked Tar Heels are 16-5, seeded third in the NCAA field. They will open play on Saturday against number 14 Delaware, which beat Liberty on Wednesday, in a play-in game. The Tar Heels and Blue Hens will face off on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. at Francis Henry Stadium with a matchup between number 6 Old Dominion and number 13 Wake Forest following a 2 in the single elimination format. The first round winners will meet on Sunday afternoon at 2 for a spot at the national semifinals. Tickets to the game are $5 and will be available at the Henry Stadium gate. For the full bracket and more on the Carolina field hockey team and the NCAA tournament, you can view this story on our website at chapelboro.com. High school seniors Joel Berry, Justin Jackson, and Theo Pinson signed national letters of intent on Wednesday to attend UNC and play men's basketball beginning in the 2014-15 season. We are ecstatic that these three young men and their families have decided to join our basketball family. That's a quote from head coach Roy Williams. Each of them, he says, are talented. They come from wonderful families. They share a common trait in that they have a tremendous desire for their teams to do well. Berry is a 6'1 point guard out of Apopka, Florida. Jackson is a 6'8 wing player from Texas. And Pinson is a 6'6 wing out of Greensboro. For comments about each player from Roy, you can view this story on our website at chapelboro.com. And the 2016 Atlantic Coast Conference basketball tournament will be held at Washington, D.C.'s Verizon Center. According to ACC Commissioner John Swofford, he says, we are excited to bring the ACC tournament back to the nation's capital in 2016. He went on to describe the Verizon Center as a tremendous showcase for the event and the Washington, D.C. area as an appealing tourist destination for the member institutions as well as alumni and fans. The 20,000-seat Verizon Center previously hosted the 2005 ACC tournament. The Washington metropolitan area also welcomed the ACC in 1976, 1981, and 1987 when the tournament was held at the Capitol Center in Landover. The 14-game 2016 tournament will open Wednesday, March 9th, and continue through Sunday, March 13th. For more on this story, you can view the website, chapelboro.com, for all the details. That's a quick look at WCHL Championship Sports. I'm Ron Stutz.
Archansky Sports Notebook, exclusively on 97.9 FM WCHL.
How many stadiums can they build in the city of Atlanta anyway? This is Archansky with Thursday Sports Notebook. I remember when the old Omni was called the eighth wonder of the world, a sleek new basketball arena with 16,000 seats, either close to the court or hanging over from an upper deck that looked like it was falling down. The Omni hosted one of the most heartbreaking games in UNC history, 1977 versus Marquette. Enough said. Well, they tore the Omni down to build the Georgia Dome and new Phillips Arena next door. The Braves had played in the Fulton County Roundhouse, perhaps the first of the dual homes for Major League Baseball and the NFL. It was in a dreadful part of town and came down after the 1996 Olympics when Turner Field emerged from the Centennial Olympic Stadium. Now they are planning to wreck the Ted, as the Braves will move to a new home 10 miles north of the city in Cobb County. The Cobb County Braves. How does that sound? A new stadium that supposedly the locals don't have to pay for, with better parking, while more accessible to MARTA and I-75-85. Ted Turner doesn't own the Braves anymore, so he can't do a darn thing about it. That's three stadia demolished in less than 20 years and four new ones going up. The Falcons will soon be playing in a downtown stadium without a roof, which means the Georgia Dome is going to have trouble paying the light bill with only the SEC Championship game and the pre- and postseason Chick-fil-A bowls assured. Do they have more money in Atlanta than they know what to do with, more than most big cities? When it took New York almost 90 years to build a new Yankee Stadium and Wrigley and Fenway are still functional, Atlanta goes through stadiums like Turner goes through bourbon and wives. Maybe it will be good for the Braves, who have great regular seasons but haven't been back to the World Series in 20-plus years. a new fan following. Those who couldn't or wouldn't come downtown to watch baseball will be cheering them on and not picking up the tab that hotel taxes and other ways to bilk the tourists will pay. I think Georgia Tech has it right, still playing in Grand Field at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Or is it Bobby Dodd Stadium at Grand Field? Tech didn't even demolish its old basketball arena. They just took money from McDonald's and flipped it into a pretty nice new old place. Sounds like a good new old compromise. This is Art Chansky. See ya.
This is Kevin Callahan of Acme in Carrboro. Our local restaurant scene has a serious edge to it. Chapel Hill is home to Four Diamond Carolina Crossroads and Il Palio Restaurant, with chefs James Clark and Adam Rose. And Carrboro has some of the best dining, clubs, and music anywhere around. And I'm proud to say that Acme is part of what makes our town so great. Honestly, why microwave three meals a day when there are so many delicious local choices just minutes away? Duck Dynasty. Really?
Explore. Taste. Tune in. Experience the edge of the triangle here in your own backyard.
Yes, holiday season is just around the corner. Time to make your home beautiful for the occasion with the help of the design team at Best Tile. With personal design consultants to guide you through the process and an unsurpassed selection of tiles from around the world, it's no wonder Best Tile has been voted the area's best tile resource for 3 years in a row. Deck the halls this year with Best Tile. Local store, global selection. Find us at the corner of 501 and Garrett Road or online at besttile.com. Today's your last chance at a great offer from OurLocalDeal.com from Carolina Core Pilates. It's 68% off, $155 for four Pilates sessions, available until midnight for $49. Pilates is designed to work the deepest muscles in the body with exercises that initiate from the core. The highly trained instructors at Carolina Core Pilates focus on helping each client meet their fitness needs. And with today's deal, you'll get one private session and three small group sessions. It's 68% off from Carolina Core Pilates, and it's available until midnight. So buy it now at OurLocalDeal.com.
Cruisers Convenience Marketplace serves fresh brewed coffee fast, guaranteed to taste great. Fuel up this morning at Cruisers. Good to go. WCHL's Chapel Hill Carbondale weather forecast. Sunny today. Night is cool. High today in the middle 50s. We started out at 28 degrees. Tonight, clear, cold with a low around 30. Again, no surprises there.
If it's happening in our Chapel Hill Carborough community, you will hear about it on 97.9 FM, WCHL, and you'll find it on our website, chapelborough.com.
CBS News Update, I'm Dave Verrett. Maybe there is some give and take when it comes to fixing the health care reform law. White House correspondent Major Garrett.
Later today, top White House officials meet with Senate Democrats on Capitol Hill to suggest and look at a legislative fix for those in the individual market who like their policies, can't afford the new ones, and want to keep them. For the first time, the White House has said it's open to a legislative fix. That's a significant backtrack because for days now, the White House has been trying to fix this administratively within the law, but maybe it can't.
Since the rollout last month, the administration says only 106,000 people signed up for health care coverage. On CBS this morning, our political director, John Dickerson, said congressional Democrats are concerned about health care reform and the website woes.
They are not abandoning the whole enterprise, but they need to show their constituents that they're doing something, either putting pressure on the White House or coming up with something that looks like they're fixing it, because they can't just sort of sit and hope for the best.
CBS News Update, I'm Dave Barrett.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech, offering affordable and accessible quality education throughout Orange and Durham counties. Visit durhamtech.edu and click on Continuing Education.
WCHL News, Talk and Tar Heels at 97.9 FM, WCHL.
It's 8:32 at WCHL, 28 degrees. I'm Rod Stutz. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory says the state's public universities are not training their students to be able to get a job out of college. But UNC Chancellor Carol Folt disagrees vehemently with that statement.
I believe deeply that places like Carolina, amongst the best in the nation, does that extremely well.
UNC Chancellor Carol Folt spoke with WCHL's Jim Hebner in a new special for her first conversation to you after taking office in July. She says Carolina is not struggling with getting students into jobs immediately after college. She says the governor's statement is just false.
85% of the students that graduate from Carolina within the first year have full-time jobs or in graduate school. It's up there at the levels of the highest of our elites. We'll continue to press forward on that. And I feel proud of what they're doing post-graduation, and I think they're going to be the people that are helping to bring new economies into the state.
Stay tuned to the WCHL Morning News at about 8:45. We're going to bring you the final part of Jim Hebner's interview with the chancellor. You can also hear the interview in its entirety Saturday night at 8 and presented again on Sunday at 12 noon and on our website at chapelborough.com. Local celebrities are rallying behind UNC student-run campaigns for two local charities. And tonight, they hope you will join them for the main event. But you might have to make a choice. WCHL's Kristen Ruffin has the story.
They tell me I'm too young to understand.
What's the popular UNC a cappella group, the Clefhangers, singing about?
Hey guys, we're the Clefhangers. I wanted to shout out, make sure you all come out to the Baby Got Throwback event.
And what is UNC basketball star PJ Harrison crying about?
Scamsies, the notorious younger brother of Ramses, is holding me hostage.
And what do the Clefhangers and PJ Harrison have in common? They're helping a good cause. Two competing good causes. A little competition never hurt anyone. In fact, it can actually do a lot of good. That seems to be the teaching strategy of UNC professor Gary Kay.
And I pit one class against the other. Basically, they have to create an event that raises money for a nonprofit.
Kay teaches a new media technology class for the UNC Journalism School. If you're involved with UNC campus life, you may have seen his students work.
Both of them are very creative. Both of them have had enormous engagement.
UNC seniors Kelly Krupe and Trisha Cleffy are the captains of the two competing teams that have created a campus-wide buzz. Cleffy's team is known as Heel Heist for the Monday Life.
So we chose the Monday Life as our cause, and they help better patient environments for UNC and Duke Children's Hospital.
The campaign raises awareness of their cause through Scamsies, a prankster whose catchphrase is, doing a little bad for a lot of good.
Scamsies decided that since UNC has such a strong athletic tradition, the best way to grab attention from people is to symbolically kidnap prominent athletes around campus. We released videos showing these athletes being a little paranoid and having Scamsies kidnap them. We did that to raise a ransom, which is $1,000.
Students are encouraged to attend the Heel Heist Thursday night to raise money for the athlete's ransom, which will go to the Monday Life. Scamsies will return Hairston and his other athlete victims at the event. Krupe's team is hosting Throwback Thursday UNC, better known as TBT UNC. And the campaign gives UNC students a chance to reminisce on their childhoods.
It's called the Baby Got Throwback Bash. And then we're going to have a DJ and a live band playing covers of the top throwback hits. And we also have over $1,200 worth of prizes to give away between now and our event.
Guests at the event will pay a cover to be donated to Camp Kesem.
It's a camp for children ages 6 to 16 who have a parent who either has or has had cancer. And it's a one-week camp in the summer, and it's basically just an opportunity for them to have fun and, you know, not have to think about the fact that it's like they're dealing with such a devastating thing back at home.
Students in this class may not need a blue book or a Scantron for this final project, but Cleffy says the pressure is still on.
You just really don't know how much work goes into these types of campaigns until you're in the middle of one.
And that's exactly the hands-on lesson Kay says he planned for the two classes.
They're doing this in real life. Instead of them getting a fake project and saying, hey, create a graphic for a company that doesn't exist, or, you know, create a social media campaign for something that doesn't exist, they're having to do something in real life. So they actually are invested in seeing it be successful.
Cleffy's and Krupe's teams face off Thursday night as they both host their events on Franklin Street at the exact same time. So who will you support? For more information about the events, you can view this story on our website, chapelboro.com. Kristen Ruffin, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
WCHL News Time is 8:37, and congratulations again to all the new inaugural members of the Chapel Hill Carborough Business Hall of Fame who were installed last night into the hall at Carolina Inn. You can go to our website, chapelboro.com, for a complete list of all those honorees. And Rachel Nash has a story there you can hear as well. We had a special guest in the studio today, Terry Klein, Development Director of the National MPS Society. Terry, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Ron.
Terry, first of all, what does MPS stand for?
Well, MPS is short for a very long name called mucopolysaccharidosis. It is a disease that affects children. And it's very basic in science for what is wrong with the children. They have an enzyme that's missing in their lysosome in order for the cell to process properly.
Now, how many children are affected by this disease?
These are rare diseases, and so we have possibly about 1 in 25,000 that are affected by these diseases worldwide. But we have a number of diseases that are more prevalent with kids than others.
Mm-hmm. Are there treatments available?
Well, that's the exciting thing right now. The National MPS Society is located right here in the Raleigh-Durham area, and we do serve all of the population nationwide. We have one office that serves the country, and it's right here. And with the research funding that we've been able to develop, we do have four treatments. We have three treatments, and one is in clinical trial right now that we're very excited about. But we still have some treatments for kids. We don't have treatments for some of the children still, mm-hmm. but we do have four.
Now, you work for the National MPS Society, but also I know this is a cause that is very near to your heart. Tell us about your family's association with this.
Well, you know, we weren't expecting to be here. Mm-hmm. I had a different background. But my daughter is affected by one of these MPS-related diseases that the society supports. It is a disease that does not have a treatment yet, unfortunately. It's a little trickier. She doesn't have an enzyme missing. Her enzymes are stuck outside the cell wall, and it's a trafficking issue. Again, it's basic in science, but very difficult to achieve. We are here at UNC because UNC happens to be one of the hub hospitals in the country. And we are able to see, not only have my daughter see some of the best doctors in the world here, but we also get to see a number of families that come into the area. And that's why we're located in this area.
Wow. I'm glad you came in today to tell us about this, because I don't know very much about MPS and about the disease itself. But you have a very special event coming up. To raise money and to raise awareness. Tell us about that.
We do. The National MPS Society has been really the grassroots fundings for researchers in order to find treatments for these diseases for over 40 years. And we have a walk run that we're hosting. It's our second annual walk run here in this area, but we've been hosting walk runs for 13 years. And every penny raised from these runs goes to research, every single penny. And it is going to be at Vaughn Park in Cary on Saturday morning, on November 16th, and we have room for registration still, but it is going to be a wonderful time. We have families coming from five states.
Wow.
In order to support the runners, and it's just going to be a great morning.
Now, I understand that some people in Chapel Hill are involved in this.
That's right. We are very pleased and say thank you to A Better Image Printing, who gave us this opportunity to speak this morning. And we have some of the physicians at UNC and some of the nurses that are going to be out there, too.
Well, you know, it's nobody wants to be sick, but if you got to be sick, this is a good community to be in if you're sick, because we have such wonderful medical facilities and so many wonderful professional people who can help you.
We really do. And if people want more information, they can come and visit our website to register at mpsrunnc.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come on, make a donation or register and come on out with everyone and enjoy the day.
You took that question right out of my mouth. Thank you so much, Terry, for coming in this morning and telling us about MPS and about this very special event.
Thank you so much, Ron.
Yeah, and thanks for being such an excellent spokesperson
Thank
for the
you.
Organization. It is 8:41 at WCHL, and coming up, we have today's commentary and away from Bruce Curran. We also have segment four of Jim Hebner's interview with Chancellor Carol Folt. That is on the way.
At Five Guys, they're in business to sell quality burgers, period. Nothing beats Five Guys' hand-formed patties of fresh ground beef piled high with any or all 15 free toppings. And who can resist Five Guys' fresh-cut Idaho fries cooked in trans-fat and cholesterol-free peanut oil? It's no wonder that Five Guys has been Sagat survey rated for 11 years. Stop by the new location at Meadowmont Village to see what all the buzz is about. For more locations and hours, visit fiveguys.com.
There's nothing better than the refreshing taste of a Cruiser's ice cold fountain drink. I'm Edward Holmes, president of Cruiser's Convenience Marketplace. At Cruiser's, we use 100% filtered water for the highest quality fountain drinks and serve them at an ice cold 34 degrees for only 79 cents. So grab your favorite drink with their chewy ice and add a flavor shot like cherry or lemon lime at most Cruiser's locations. You'll taste the difference. We guarantee it.
Cruiser's. Good to go.
Most Americans are not aware that a child is born every 30 minutes with a lysosomal storage disease, one of them being MPS. Children are diagnosed each day and suffer physical pain before they lose their battle. On Saturday, November 16th at 9 a.m. at Vaughn Park in Cary, the National MPS Society is hosting the Walk for a Cure for MPS and related diseases. Every single dollar raised is directed toward research. Help us in the fight against rare diseases. For more information on how to participate or make a donation, please visit mpsrunnc.com.
That's what we just talked about. Our thanks to Terry Klein for coming in and telling us about that today. It is 8:43 at WCHL.
I'm Louise.
Farnham of Weaver Street Realty. It's time to get back into the woods. Call Weaver Street Realty's land walking team to guide you through, over, and around building lots, farms, and homes with acreage. We'll help you see the roll of the land and smell the sweetness of clean air. Need a perk site? We'll teach you the process. Give us a call and let's go walking. We'll bring the orange vest. Weaver Street Realty, 919-929-5658.
It's here.
Diamonds Direct Crabtree's biggest sale of 2013.
This weekend.
3 days of spectacular pre-holiday savings.
This is the big one.
You get Diamonds Direct's amazing value price.
Plus, extra savings on every piece of diamond fashion and designer jewelry.
All earrings, all bracelets, all bands, pendants, pearls, even engagement ring mountings.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Buy now, save big, and let us hold it for you till Christmas.
Extra savings store-wide.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Only at Diamonds Direct Crabtree.
On Glenwood outside Crabtree Valley Mall.
29 degrees, 844 at WCHL. I'm Rod Stutz.
And now, WCHL presents the commentators.
This is Bruce Curran. Poor Roy. It must be like living with a chronic illness that you just can't shake. Outside shooter deficit syndrome. I'm not sure if he's considered going to the Mayo Clinic, but I wouldn't rule it out. Roy appears to be about as popular as A-Rod with people who can shoot a basketball from 22 feet. And this is getting to be a real problem for the program. Pick your own metaphor. But you cannot get to the end of the rainbow, the top of the food chain, or, God forbid, the head of the class, without lots of reliable outside shooting in the current iteration of NCAA basketball. Now, that's not saying you can't have a very good team. You're just not likely to win any hardware. Let's look at a few recent stats. If I'm not mistaken, in the last decade, Carolina has shot the ball over 40% from the arc only twice, in 2005 and 2009. Guess what happened? And Roy has really only had two great twos in the backcourt in that same period of time, Rashad McCants and Wayne Ellington. Again, enough said. There have been some okay outside shooters like Reggie Bullock, but they were either hurt a lot or unreliable, especially in the clutch. The NCAA tournament is for shooters. Big men in the NCAA are just no big deal anymore. It's certainly not for lack of trying, but Roy has been asking all the pretty girls to the dance for the last four recruiting classes, and everybody is saying no. Carolina's never been a hotbed of the one-and-dones, so he's obviously losing those guys. Originally, it was only to Kentucky, but recently Duke, Kansas, Ohio State, Florida, Indiana, Arizona, and UCLA are getting into that market on a regular basis. But maybe more importantly is the fact that Roy's high-powered offense is based on virtually everything but outside shooting, and that just will not showcase a great shooter. This season, he has offered scholarships to at least six of the top shooters in the country, and he's now down to just one or possibly two who pundits say are unlikely to come. One of them has been Roy's top recruiting target for 18 months, and we could lose him to Iowa State? Huh? Roy has a great group coming in 2014. There's still no shooter in it. Maybe the best class he's ever recruited, but without a great shooter these days, even with a great class, you have a Ferrari with a bad spark plug that will start misfiring as soon as you play Kansas in the Elite Eight. I wish I had a solution, but I don't. And frankly, I don't care if he has to go to the Russian Mafia to get a good shooter. Roy's a great coach, and if he does pull a rabbit out of the hat and secure one of the two remaining off guards, the experts say the team will be one of the odds-on favorites for the title in 2015. But I'm also saying if he doesn't, the only new NCAA hardware we're likely to see at Carolina in the next few years will be from women's soccer and lacrosse. This is Bruce Curran.
Is there a local issue you care about? You're invited and encouraged to contribute your own views on this or any other issue. The Commentators, local people, local issues, on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Good morning, it is 847 at WCHL.
The following is a special presentation of WCHL News. Now, a WCHL News special with Jim Hebner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. Chancellor Folt has officially been on the job for 4 months. And in a four-part series, you'll hear, in a wide range of topics, what the Chancellor has been doing in the early days as leader of North Carolina's flagship university. Now, we conclude WCHL's News special with Jim Hebner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. Here's the fourth and final part of the conversation.
Chancellor Folt, all of the transgressions that we talked about in our earlier parts of the interview this occurred before you got here, but you've inherited a job of managing the cleanup of them in the FM scandal aftermath and the issues with athletics. What lessons do you think that you personally or that the institution should have learned from these and or should have learned?
I think they've done a lot of work. The with the accrediting panel coming back and looking at all the new processes were looked at, put in place following the academic issues with the FM. Lots of changes were made. I think people learned a lot about that and are excited about the changes. They feel like they have something in place that they're proud of and they can see things move forward in a positive way. I think that's the same in the athletics department. There are a number of recommendations from the Rawlings panel, for example, that Carolina had already put in place, some of them years ago, some of them more recently. For example, making sure that all the medical care was not under the athletics department but was under different control, just like our academic advising is now moved all the way under our provost office. So in some ways, I think people used these disappointments and these very difficult times, some of them very, very troubling, to really make changes that were positive. And they're engaged in them. The people on campus helped design those processes, and so their success is much more likely because of that.
It was under multiple chancellors that the FM department was running these bogus courses. And so when we begin to step into that, it's hard to tell whether that was an issue that I think we would hope that that was just an issue that would involve two people, the chair of the department and the administrator. But nonetheless, that did happen. Can you tell us what controls have been put in place to ensure the integrity of the academic side of things that you're involved in, and how confident are you that they're effective enough that we won't have that happen again?
Well, Jim, this is pretty early for me to tell you all the details. They've all been outlined. I know they've been reported on in the paper quite a few times. But they've put in a lot of oversight, how many independent projects are being done by a single person, the way that's followed through in the department, the way that then goes from the department up to the dean. So there's many, many checks and balances now in place that are observed on a term-by-term basis and reported on with metrics to follow. I think that's what they feel very good about that. And every single dean feels a sense of responsibility to hold to that standard. I think the flip side of all that is, of course, it wasn't taking place in all the other or in any other place that we know of on campus. Sometimes one really distressing, bad set of happenings become the poster child for the way the institution is working, and of course that was not the case. In most cases, the processes were safe. In most cases, people were doing all the oversight and management you could ever possibly want. So it isn't a case of changing everything. It's a case of just being even more vigilant to look for those one or two bad apples that are there and make sure that you find them.
We, of course, are always most interested in what's happening in our family, in our town, in our university. But after all this surfaced, it has occurred to me to wonder if there's anyone out there who's has a best practices study on this. Do you know whether this has happened in other schools? Is this any report of this happening in other places? Did you ever have anything like this at Dartmouth?
We didn't have anything specifically like this. I think every school has had its own examples of cheating scandal. I mean, there are things that happen in academics, and everybody's aware of them, and usually they're the very rare example, and they do everything possible to put things in place to stop it ever happening again. I know that one of the ways people think about it, though, is let's get everything in place so they never do happen. You don't want it to have to be reactive. So when people address something like what happened here in Chapel Hill, they've put in place ways to prevent this happening that now affect all courses. So you use it as an opportunity to become preventive as well. But I don't know of another exact example.
Now, you are facing, for the first time in our history, you're coming to North Carolina to be the chancellor here for the first time in history with our first legislature that's all Republican and very conservative. Governor McCrory has excoriated the educational elite who he says dominate the schools, and he's obviously pointing at Chapel Hill. He says the schools teach worthless courses that offer no chances of people getting jobs. This was in a national radio interview, got a lot of attention. He said there was a major disconnect between what skills are taught at the state's public universities and what businesses want out of colleges. And so just to make this very clear, he said, so, these are his words, I'm going to adjust my educational curriculum. And I would say this are my words, not his. I don't know whether he is the adjuster of the curriculum, but that's what he said. I'm going to adjust my educational curriculum to what business and commerce needs to our kids. Jobs to get our kids jobs, as opposed to moving back in with their parents after graduation with debt. What we are teaching in these courses for is nothing that'll help them get a job. And then he went on to say, but if you want gender studies, that's fine. Go to a private school and take it. But I don't want to subsidize that if it's not going to get help get someone a job. Well, the problem is that his view is likely reflected in the legislative leadership that may be more conservative than he is. So how do you respond to that?
I think the most important issue in facing higher education is dealing with this value proposition. Are we, in our great publics, creating students and preparing for the future? Our mission has always been create critical knowledge, be the innovation generators for new business and changes and advances in culture and civilization, and then create the workforce best prepared to advance. I believe deeply that places like Carolina amongst the best in the nation, does that extremely well. We bring these bright students in, we give them an incredible breadth of understanding, and then we give them depth. Each one of them has a major, sometimes two majors, that have detailed skills taking them all the way to the forefront of knowledge in that area. And these skills are deeply transferable. The skills we want for the future are the skills for students that can prepare themselves not for the jobs that are sitting there today, but for the jobs and creating the jobs of tomorrow. If you think about digital world, the jobs that our students are getting now didn't even exist 10 or 15 years ago. So we need to continue what we do is make them extremely prepared to go into the industries of today, but even more so to be flexible and create the industries of tomorrow. Carolina does it. It has a graduation. I saw some statistics recently that said 85% of the students that graduate from Carolina within the first year have full-time jobs or are in graduate school. It's up there at the levels of the highest of our elites. We'll continue to press forward on that. And I feel proud of what they're doing post-graduation. And I think they're going to be the people that are helping to bring new economies into the state.
We probably ought to come back and schedule another hour just to talk about money, because at the end of the day, it's income and outgo. Where do you get the money, and then where do you spend it? And so I'm going to try to summarize in the limited time we have here to two things. One is the internal politics. How much time do you spend in Raleigh working the halls of the legislature?
I've been over there several times. I was there when I first came. My second day I went there. And I've also been trying to meet the delegation in Washington. So that's been great. I've also met some people out in the districts when I've been going out around the state. So I see it as very important.
I'm wondering if there may be some good news, if it's some good news out of what's... I would think it's a safe generalization to say that the more the university can find a way to keep its business out of politics, the better things are. I think that'd be a non-controversial statement. And the politics is local. And local money is typically more likely to be swayed by at least political rhetoric, if not political action. So one of the things that's really happening is I've been watching this over the last few years. Without drowning us in numbers, Raleigh's appropriations and grants have continued to drop from it peaked out in 2008. It's actually $654 million at that time, down to $606 million, down to a drop of $48 million. In that same period of time, the federal government grant support to the university has grown from $550 million to $760 million. So today, you're getting $154 million more from the federal government than you got from Raleigh. So that's an interesting trend, and it appears to be a trend. Well, first of all, do you believe that trend is likely to continue, that ratio?
I think it will. I think we are seeing a change in the balance of the dollars, where they come from into the university, and I think that's happened in universities around the country.
And what then might be true, does that make it less political?
You know, I think our mission to educate and create knowledge is really not political. It is what we've been trying to do for 220 years. My goal is to work on those key issues, the way we produce knowledge, the students that we educate, and the value we bring to the community. And I think that is as important to Raleigh as it would have been under any political leadership. My first conversation with Governor McCrory, I said, I want Carolina to be your best story, the piece of Carolina, of North Carolina, that you're most proud of and to do the most for this community. And I still think that's our goal.
Chancellor, speaking of money, we've got lots of infrastructure issues here. When I've studied, each year I study this, and we've got more and more. The amount of work here that's not being done because you don't have the money on crumbling infrastructure seems to me to be something we can talk about a lot. Digital education is a huge issue that's facing the university and all the other things that are changing in the world. So I hope we'll be able, our time is gone. I hope we'll be able to come back maybe and talk about those things because they are certainly going to have a major impact on, we've talked a lot about where the university is today. I'm not sure we've really had a chance to talk as much about the university of the future as I would like. I hope you'll come back and let us do that again sometime in the future.
Love to do that, Jim. Thank you.
You've been listening to a WCHL News Special with Jim Hebner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. You can listen to this interview in its entirety on our website, chapelboro.com. This has been a special presentation of WCHL News. It is a chilly morning, 29 degrees in Chapel Hill. Sunshine today, not as cool. Our high today in the middle 50s. Tonight, clear skies. Cold again with a low around 30. And tomorrow, partly sunny with a high of about 60 degrees.
Local news all day. Breaking news whenever it happens. This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel Station.
It's 9 o'clock.
And now, CBS News, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development, where commerce plus social equity, plus environmental stewardship.